Florida Basketball, our podcast, is brought to you by the Gatorverse, an exclusive community dedicated to connecting University of Florida fans and student-athletes. Members receive access to exclusive autographed collectibles, real-life experiences, giveaways, VIP events, rewards, and athletes receive a majority of revenue from sales of their collectibles. That's the way that NIL is supposed to work. To find out more about becoming a Gatorverse member and Lockermania, visit Gatorverse.io. That's Gatorverse.io.
Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, I will discuss Florida's big win over Miss State on Wednesday night in the O-Dome. Great win for Florida, probably their best win of the season from a resume standpoint, even though it's just a quad two win. So we'll get into that a little bit. We will also break down Florida's coming game this weekend against Georgia, which is a sellout, the third consecutive weekend sellout for Gators basketball. So, you know, obviously there's still excitement building around this team as it sort of welcomes the dogs in a sold out at Zach Tech Arena for what's going to be a pretty important game. Kevin Brockway from the Gainesville Sun will join us as Eric Fawcett is out for this episode. We will get to my interview with Kevin in just a minute. I did want to talk a couple things about Florida's 79-70 win. Just kind of first of all, to give some context to the Brockway interview, you know, really I wanted to make a couple schematic points. The first one I thought was just Florida defensively, another really terrific effort. You know, I tweeted one constant issue with Florida's pick and roll defense this season has been that sometimes Florida's bigs get too deep in terms of their pick and roll defense. And I think that ball screen issue has been a problem. Look, you know, some of these offenses like Kentucky are really good and they can score against most any type of defense that Florida has. So it's not just the Gators that are getting blown up by Kentucky, but Florida plays drop coverage. And with what that means is that, you know, their bigs tend to drop towards the basket with the roll man. And the idea is to prevent easier baskets at the 10. But Florida's ball screen defense has been pretty rugged at times because you don't want to get too deep in that drop. And I think what happens is sometimes Florida can be too slow chasing over the screen. And then their big drops so deep that, you know, after the screen, the guy with the ball can do pretty much whatever he wants. And we saw in the Mid-State game, Alex Conning get caught too deep and Ben Hubbard hit, you know, really wide open mid-range shot. And that was kind of an example of that. But we saw it with Doug McDaniel against Florida in the Michigan game, which was even more disappointing because Michigan starts their screens so high and Florida was still getting caught too deep in their drops. We saw it with Reed Shepard and DJ Wagner in the second half of the Kentucky game during the Kentucky comeback. So it's been a pretty consistent problem for Florida. And, you know, I think Florida had to figure out that, you know, to fix their defense, they needed to do two things. And I think they've done more of them in the last couple of games. One, and we saw it in the second half, with Alex Condon not dropping so deep almost immediately and, you know, it becoming a lot harder for Miss State to operate mid-range. The other thing that Florida's done, interestingly, is they've switched off the ball less. Like, Florida still switches against certain opponents and lineups, but the heavy off-ball switching that we saw all the time under Mike White and we saw some early in the season this year has not happened as much. So that can be hard on the low man in the ball screens. It's a lot easier for an opponent to get a mismatch that way. We saw it against Tennessee. And Florida has big guards, but even those big guards on big guys kind of creates situations where if it's big on, say, Walter Clayton one-on-one, it's easy for Walt to get his hips turned. So Florida has switched less, and they've switched more effectively, and pretty much switching on the ball as opposed to off the ball, I think, has made a huge difference in Florida's defense. And we saw it in the mistake game. The Gators held State to 38.7% shooting, a 44% effective field goal percentage, which was 7 percentage points below their season average of 51. And then Florida also, of course, gets the Tolu Smith kind of quiet double-double, right, where, you know, the reality is Tolu Smith is an excellent player, probably the best classic big Florida's played, and he has a kind of quiet double-double with 10 points and 10 rebounds. I love how Florida doubled him, using a small sometimes to double two, which also prevented, I think it challenged Mid State to make shots, but it also allowed Florida to exploit quick and active hands if Smith decided to put the ball on the floor. And, that worked really well. I mean, Tolu was very frustrated by Florida. So I thought just Florida's second consecutive excellent defensive performance, putting a third together this weekend will be really important. We'll talk about Georgia in a minute. Before we welcome in Kevin, I also wanted to talk a little bit about offensively. I just thought this was better offense from Florida in terms of a game plan than in recent games. Florida runs its stuff fine. That's why they're in the top 20 in the country in offensive efficiency. I think one criticism that not just I or Eric have had, but a lot of people have wondered, like, hey, what is Florida doing that is sort of bespoke to certain opponents? Like, what specific wrinkles are they putting in for, say, Kentucky or Tennessee? Well, against Miss State, I thought the Gators were really, really prepared for Miss State's hedging defense. Miss State does a great job with their hedges because they disguise them really well. So, like, Miss State, when Miss State hedges, it almost looks like a switch, or sometimes it looks like a trap, and then it's a hedge. And that can be pretty hard to read. But Florida, I thought, did a really good job of dragging the hedge, which is a complicated kind of way of attacking a hedge where you really rely on your ball handler to drag the hedge defender into space, into the middle of the court, and then attack that space. And to do that, I thought Zion Pullen showed just a really good job, really good body control, dribbling around the high foot of the hedge defender and just dragging whoever it was in the middle of the court, splitting it, and then looking opposite after the split, meaning, like, as soon as he got to the middle of the floor, it was an opportunity for Florida to kind of reverse the ball. Usually going back to where the hedge came from, but not always. And ZP just shows tremendous technique on it, keeping his shoulder between the knee and the hip of the defender, and then just keeping his eyes up as he splits the hedge and then attacking and getting into the paint and causing Miss State's bigs to kind of suction out, which created space for Florida under the basket as well. Florida also used drag ball screens when Miss State hedged. So I thought Florida had nice variance, which is another issue that they've had offensively, where, like, sometimes Florida has one really good plan, but they're not particularly multiple in the way that they attack things. Here, I like Florida's drag screens where, you know, obviously when you hedge, one risk is that your on-ball defender and your hedge man become sort of disconnected from the rest of the defense. And so Florida does a nice job with drag screens, kind of this, because you have a disconnected hedge man, you have a disconnected on-ball defender, and your screener then pulls help defense out. And we saw Florida get nice baskets at the rim by Walter Clayton and Richard this way in the second half. So I thought Florida did just a couple different things to attack Mistich head hedges that were super effective and really worked pretty well. And, you know, it was consistent. It wasn't like a one half thing. Obviously Florida did not shoot the ball as well in the second half. Kevin and I are going to talk about Mistich's press a little bit and why that bothered Florida. And it'll be interesting to see if Mike White goes to school on that and throws in some 1-3-1. It's certainly something that Georgia can do. But we will get to the Georgia game in just a moment. So want to bring in Kevin Brockway now to talk a little bit about Miss State, and I will be returning on the other side of this to break down the Florida-Georgia game a little more in depth. Obviously, Kevin and I are going to talk about it too. We are pleased to welcome Kevin Brockway, Gainesville Sun, longtime Gators writer, left for a little while, left us all out in the cold. No, I'm kidding. And we're so glad that he's back in
Gainesville. I was in the cold. I was in Indiana. It was a little frigid up there, but it's good to be back in Florida.
You were. We're glad that you're back in Gainesville covering the Gators like you did so well and continue to do so well for the Gainesville Sun. If y'all don't follow Kevin on Twitter, make sure you do. Kevin Brockway Gators is his Twitter handle nowadays. So make sure you get into that. Kevin, obviously a huge win for Florida last night. Even though it's not a quad one win, it feels like maybe one of the first wins the committee will raise eyebrows at.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it was big for momentum. I mean, listen, you know, you start out 1-3 in the SEC. I think it's important to even it up. I really think it was critical, you know, when you got off to that start. And obviously, you know, Kentucky was disappointing at home because that was a game you thought you had. But if you could get through January at 4-4, I think we're seeing that this SEC schedule is pretty front loaded with how Ole Miss has turned things around this year under Chris Beard, certainly Tennessee and Kentucky, and you're going to get Kentucky again at the end of the month. I think if you probably felt like if you could get through this month 4-4 in the league, you'd feel pretty good going into February. And now you've won two in a row, both games, average margin of double digits, 10.5 points. You know, certainly, you know, it was a little dicey at the end there. You know, Florida took his foot off the gas a little bit, but hey, to their credit, 10 of 11 free throws down the stretch. And it was kind of funny. Todd Golden opened his press conference. He said, "Who's going to ask about free throws, right?" So Florida still last in the SEC in free throw percentage, but climbing and getting better in that area. So that's kind of a credit to the work that they've put in.
Yeah, it is. Alex Condon obviously hitting some huge free throws down the stretch. Talk about him a little bit and just kind of watching his development. And the reason I ask about him first is that you, like I mentioned, you have covered so many Florida teams. So you've seen freshmen that get it before. Like, is that what you see when you watch Condon? And he obviously continues to get better, especially on the physicality front. Like, dealing with Tolu Smith like he did is no joke. And I thought he played quite well yesterday.
Yeah, and I think, too, the physicality is what stands out about him, that he's not afraid. And I think that Aussie rules football background. And listen, we were hearing about him all the way in last summer in the terms of the workouts, in terms of, of what he was doing. Certainly he's got a pretty good offensive skill set, too. I think he passes well. You know, he's got nice form on his shot. You know, I think the defense is improving, but, you know, still a little bit off pick and rolls and so forth. That's an area where he's got to continue to get better at his lateral quickness, but he's got a lot of other, you know, high skills. And what stood out to me was, I'm trying to remember the game in non-conference where he had, you know, something in the neighborhood of, what, 15 or 16 rebounds, which as a freshman was pretty close to Al Horford's record, 18 rebounds back in the day against Alabama. So anytime you're a freshman and you can have that kind of rebounding total, I think it bodes well for the future. I really love his upside. And he strikes me as a kid that's going to work, so and going to stick around. So I think that we're going to see a lot of really good things from him as a sophomore and a junior too, as long as he continues his path and this trajectory. And like I said, you know, the physical nature, you know, particularly in a league like the SEC, that's something you can't teach. You either have it inside or you don't. And I think Alex has that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that stood out to me last night was just that, you know, he drew four fouls, which is the same number of fouls that Tolu Smith, who entered the game ranked, I think, third in the country in fouls drawn per 40 minutes. So if you're drawing the same number of fouls in less minutes than Tolu Smith, like, you're obviously up for the physical challenge. But it was a collective effort on Smith by the Gators, especially because it looked like he was going to come out and do what he usually does against Florida, which is get 20 points and 15 rebounds. And then, you know, he had 6 points and six rebounds in like the first 10 minutes. And then it just kind of, Florida did a real good job collectively just shutting him down.
Yeah, well, you know, they brought the double on the touches and they kept him away from the basket. I think that was really a big key. You know, they really And they had to give up a little bit with that because they gave up with some open looks with Hubbard, and Hubbard got going a little bit, and he's a very good freshman, but he's a gunner too. I think he had something like 25 shot attempts in that game, something that's interesting. But not letting Tolu get going inside. And I think the rebounding in general, you know, there was that one possession early in the game where they got about four or five offensive rebounds and it was really stilted. But by the end of the game, even though Mississippi State ended up, I think it was 46-41, Florida was up for the fight, I think. And they kind of leveled that off a little bit. You know, you take a look at a guy like Will Richard, who had 9 rebounds in that game from the 3 spot, the third guard spot, was very impressive. And I think collectively it was, another good effort on the boards. You know, even though they got out rebounded, it could have been much worse. And that's a pretty physical Mississippi State team. That's a team that has got a lot of thickness to a lot of bruisers and kind of an older team. And Florida, you know, maintained that throughout and did a good job, and certainly, you know, did a good job defensively and holding them under 40% from the field. That's an area where I think they've shown a little bit of growth as well.
Yeah, no, I think probably Florida's best couple defensive performances back-to-back at least have come in these last couple of games. And then obviously Florida's guards continue to be really steady. And this was a game where it seemed like Florida had better guards than Miss State. I think if you scouted it, you would have known that. But then it becomes super evident, even with, as you said, Hubbard not being particularly gun-shy. Like Florida gets, you know, another good game from Walter Clayton, another good game from Zion Pullen. But even Riley Kugel seems to be embracing his role as sort of a six man.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's good to have, you know, four guards that are capable, certainly, of having big nights. And, you know, we saw that Riley a couple of weeks ago against Arkansas about a week and a half ago, you know, kind of, you know, had that big game. Listen, it's been an up and down season for him. It's been well chronicled, you know, not the best body language. Sometimes it's in and out, but you know, when he's engaged, he's a, you know, terrific athlete, very good defender. And I think he's getting used to that role a little bit. I just think in general too, you know, Neil, when you talk about this team, you know, we sometimes forget 9 new faces. That's a lot to put, you know, into a team. And I think defensively, you know, Todd talked a lot about being more connected. And I do think with these guys and these new guards, Zion Pullen, who, don't forget, you know, missed a couple of games early in the season. Yeah. You know, you had Walter Clayton, you know, who banged up his wrist in that game. And Will Richard, who I think is really coming along too. And, you know, listen, he's a shooter, so he's going to go through some ups and downs. He's on a nice hot streak right now. But, you know, even if he doesn't shoot the ball particularly well, if he does the little things like he did last night, he had 2 blocks, 2 steals, you know, including that really big one at the end of the first half, yeah, which was a big momentum play. You know, he can continue to do that and then, you know, have his games where he, you know, fills it up a little bit and shoots the ball pretty well. They're going to be okay because they do have a lot of firepower in the backcourt, I think, and different guys who can step up on different nights. But I think it's still a team that's going to grow because of the new faces. I still believe that basketball is a continuity game. I mean, we saw that with the last Final Four team in 2014. It is a different era in college basketball, but you'd like to have that continuity. And I think that when you have a team with a lot of transfers like that, that's going to grow in February and March, hopefully, if they continue to put the work in.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the Arkansas teams that have been successful, and a lot of them had slow starts to league play, slow starts in the non-conference, and then, you know, Coach Musk putting a bunch of transfers together, they started to play well. They play their best in February and March, not that they weren't capable of playing well. And I think we've seen this Florida team play well at times. But yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, nice margins of victory in the last two games, and then a season-low 7 turnovers last night against one of the most physical and best defenses in the SEC.
Yeah, and they did throw the press at him a little bit. They did get the 1 10-second violation, but I thought for the most part, you know, handled it okay. Threw a lot of those bullet passes to Alex Condon, who was kind of like Chris Collinsworth there. He's kind of like a receiver making some of those catches against the press. And listen, we've seen, you know, we saw in the Michigan game, certainly near the end of regulation, you know, them turning the ball over on a trap on the press and so forth. And that's an area they've got to, I think, continue to grow and get better. But that being said, yeah, 7 turnovers against a Mississippi State team that was really in their grill a lot in the second half, trying to get back into the game, I think. And I do think that, against that press, there were times where Florida kind of backed off and worked the clock and maybe could have been a little more aggressive and attacked it and tried to get to the free throw line and gotten fouls. And I think that's, you know, Todd even said in the post-game press conference, hey, that's on me a little bit. I've got to teach them, you know, not to put the foot off the gas. And we will see a coach that was pretty notorious for trying to bleed the clock on Saturday when our old friend Mike White comes to town when Florida plays Georgia, which should be interesting as well.
Yeah, no, want to get into Blanco a little bit in a minute, especially because speaking of bleeding the clock, I mean, it almost bit him against LSU last night, but we can get into that in just a minute. I did want to ask you about, you know, just where this team is. Obviously, you've seen that this staff can evaluate with the way that Condon has contributed, with the way really Thomas Hawk has had a nice freshman season. He just hasn't, you know, his minutes have kind of waxed and waned in league play, like a lot of freshmen. But we've also seen, you know, I think much more their first full offseason that their portal evaluations have been much more successful. Whether it's Cyan Pullen, who looks like one of the best guards in the SEC on most nights, or Walter Clayton, who, I mean, I'll admit, I'm the first one to admit, I kind of thought he was going to be like a catch and shoot guy. And it turns out he's quite a prolific scorer. Like, it's a little Mike Rosario-ish to make a comparison.
Yeah, and he's got some toughness to him too. I like that. You know, he's got that football mentality too. This team on average is a lot tougher than last year's team. And listen, I mean, yeah, Colin Castleton was kind of a warrior, but on average, last year's team didn't have the toughness physically and maybe even a little bit mentally that I think this team has shown so far, and a little bit of resilience, you know, but certainly in coming back from the 1-3 SEC start that they have, which you know, I think will bode well for them. Now, listen, you know, they still, you know, like I said, you know, the defense is still a little bit in and out early in the season. It looks like it's starting to come together. And I think sometimes they still do, you know, the shot selection, but Todd gives them freedom. I mean, Todd gave what, you know, he gives Han Logdon and he gives Tyrese Samuel freedom to, you know, throw up some threes. And, you know, Tyrese airballed one and he heard it from the crowd a little bit, a few groans here and there. But I think for the most part, you know, I think with Zion, especially at the point, I think he has settled him down a little bit. And I do think they are taking a little bit better shots, but that's got to be a continued emphasis too, is, you know, I think the good teams pass up the good shots for the great shots. And that's an area too, where in perimeter in general, 8 for 25 from three, 32%. They missed a lot late in that game. They did hit a lot of big threes when it counted to build the 17-point lead. But I think that, you know, this team still has a little bit more, and I think Todd does too, in terms of shooting the ball from three. I think he feels like they, you know, that they have a little bit more of an upside there, and we'll see if that transpires. I mean, you know, Riley's obviously struggled from the 3-point line all season too, and you'd like to see him get a little better, but there's kind of room for growth, I think, for this team as you get into February and March in that regard.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, that's what's interesting, because they're already playing offense at a very high level, right? Like, I mean, if you look at their KenPom efficiency, and I know they brought in Coach Andercheck with the expanded staff, and I think he's made a difference with what they've done offensively.
The tempo too, by the way. I love how they play. Like, the speed is good.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, if they start making more shots, that the efficiency is even higher. And then you mentioned it just, you know, kind of in passing, but the defense, you know, I think better than the sum of its parts is better than the performance to date. But some of that is transfers. Some of it is a guy like Micah Hanlockton figuring out exactly how physical he has to play once league play starts. And another good night for him. Like, he can, as Billy Donovan used to say, like, you have to understand how to impact winning when you're not a primary scorer or even maybe a secondary scorer. And Micah certainly did that yesterday night.
Yeah, and I think Micah wants to be physical. It's just a matter of him getting there and some of that, you know. And he had a good offseason, I think, in that regard too. But let's not forget, he came from Marshall, a program that just went up and down the court. and where defense was a little bit of an afterthought. And so I do think that he's getting used to that, and he's getting used to that SEC grind. And he you know, I think Todd said the other day, he's only a sophomore. I think as he continues to fill out, I think that that kind of bodes well for him in that regard. But I do like him. He's a really pleasant kid too. He's really one of the better interviews on the team. Really thoughtful. And I think he's a guy that cares. So I think he's going to continue to get better in that regard. But, you know, I think that's, you know, another, you know, part of this team too, that I think Todd did really well in the portal, you know, adding size, adding depth, and you're seeing it in the rebounding numbers. I love teams that can rebound. I think that, you know, going back to, you know, obviously the glory days and the whole Noah Horford Brewer teams that I covered, you know, three lottery picks across the front line, you know, they could beat you in a lot of different ways, but really the way they hurt you the most was you had three guys across the front line that, that were capable of getting double doubles on every night. And if you can hold teams to one shot and get multiple scoring opportunities on the glass, you're going to win a lot of games. And I think this Florida team, it's worked pretty well for them. And I think that's why, you know, they've gone from one of the worst rebounding teams in the SEC last year to one of the best. And that's a credit to Todd and his staff for addressing that in the transfer portal through the size and the physicality that they added.
So they are going to be bigger than the team that they're about to play. Although Georgia has a lot of quality wings, which I guess to me proves two things. Like one, the roster that Mike kind of left behind at Florida was lacking in size, which was a problem with some of White's late teams. Two, maybe Mike White learned his lesson, because I don't remember a Florida roster that had as many wings as this Georgia team has. And those teams have created some mismatch problems for Florida, but Georgia doesn't score particularly well. But like all Mike White teams, they seem to defend. They really defend the arc great. Teams are shooting just 31% from deep against them. And I mean, Mike's got them off to their – that it's the best start at Georgia since the Jim Herrick era.
How about that, right? I mean, I think RJ Melendez has added something. Obviously, he's a guy that, you know, the transfer from Illinois has given him, you know, a little bit of a lift offensively in terms of a guy that can score a little bit. He's, you know, I think in general, you know, Mike, listen, Mike's, you know, had some up and downs as an offensive coach at Florida, but his team's always defended pretty hard, and they created points off turnovers. So I think that's going to be another area where Florida's going to have to be really mindful of, because, you know, Mike, as we know, he'll throw a zone press at you. You know, he did it at Louisiana Tech. He did it here at Florida. So I think that's really going to be one of the keys to the game. And you know, just having, you know, Ty Clark talked about, you know, they have a few stretch fours on that team also that can cause some damage. So it's going to be kind of a different challenge defensively in terms of, you know, getting out there while maintaining, you know, your ability to rebound underneath the basket and cut off the driving lane. So it's going to be another tough challenge, but a chance to get above 500 in the SEC is kind of a big game for Florida.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Georgia being kind of firmly in the bubble conversation as well, it's one of those games where obviously quad one opportunity, it's a game where if Florida loses, that's a bad loss, because it becomes, not only did you lose a home game, which you have to hold serve at home in the SEC right now, but also you lose to a team that's contemporaneously on the bubble with you. I think the Gators have an advantage at guard. Again, you know, Georgia obviously has a very highly recruited kid, Blue Kane, who Mike was and their staff, they were recruiting to Florida. And then they made the switch and Kane ends up at Georgia. Justin Hill is a kid that gives him the point guard he kind of lacked last year, went to the NCAA tournament with Longwood, I think. But yeah, I mean, not nearly the explosive types of scores or even the physicality of Florida's guards. Probably a chance for Florida to exploit that mismatch.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, Abdur Rahim is a guy that obviously is a scorer. You know, he's going to be a concern in that game. But I do think that for Florida, you know, you're at home. You know, it's going to be Saturday crowd. It's going to be a pretty good crowd. I think it's important to get off to a good start. And, you know, I think they did that late in the first half, particularly against Mississippi State. They built that cushion. made them able to, you know, withstand that run in the second half, that 10-0 run in the Mississippi State game, by building that cushion. It's, you know, these games are marathons, as you know, they're 40-minute games. There's going to be some ebbs and flows to them, but I think Florida did obviously a really nice job at home, and you know, you usually the Saturday games, especially the noon games, it's going to be a pretty charged atmosphere, and that's going to be important too to help them you know, carry through. And I'm sure there are going to be some fans that are you know, going to get on mic a little bit, but that's part of it. That's part of the fun of it.
Well, you know, and you covered before you took your little sojourn to the cold, frozen north. You covered some of the early white teams that were just, you know, masters at winning on the road. And that's the thing you notice with Georgia right now is that they're 3-1 in road games. Like they, and the one game they lost, they was at Rupp. So, you know, certainly they'll be ready to play, I guess is the point I'm making.
Yeah, and they beat South Carolina, who beat Kentucky, you know, at Colonial Life, you know, and Georgia went in there and won that game. So that's proving to be a really quality win. And, yeah, you know, Mike's teams, you know, early in SEC play, you know, you had Chris Chiozzi, you had Devin Robinson, you had Kenyon Barry. That was a special team. You know, you can make the argument really the last great Florida team, right, that went to the Elite Eight that year was second to Kentucky. But league was a little different back then. I think it's a lot harder now than it was. We've seen it evolve through the coaching and the commitment to resources that a lot of these SEC teams have put into it. You know, back then the SEC might have been a 4 or 5 bid league. Now it's a 7 or 8 bid league. So it's definitely, you know, a lot more, a lot tougher to navigate through, I think, than even 7, 8 years ago.
Well, Kevin, thank you for your time today. I appreciate having you, you know, and make sure everybody gets after Kevin on Twitter, Kevin Brockway Gators, and reads his great work at the Gainesville Sun. It's been over a decade of tremendous Gator basketball coverage from you, Kevin. So,
well, Neil, I greatly appreciate the kind words, and it is good to be back. And yeah, Kevin Brockway G1, Gatorsports.com, Gainesville.com, wherever you want to find me, we'll be keeping it up.
All right, man. Thank you so much for having for being here.
Yeah, pleasure. And I almost made it through without coughing a little bit, but I'm you know, on the mend here, and hopefully I'll you know, get back to 100% soon.
Fantastic. Take care, Kevin.
All right, thank you.
So once again, thank you to Kevin Brockway for joining us. Always good to have Kevin, man. One of the leading guest on this pod. I think he trails. I don't know if that tied him up with Blake Lavelle, Southeastern Hoops, or not. But either way, one of our, I think it does. So I think him and Blake are now neck and neck again in terms of like all time guest over 6 years, which is crazy because Kevin like left for a couple years. Speaking of gone for a couple years, Mike White back in Gaines, Vegas, to play the Gators, sold out at Zach Tech Arena on Saturday. Georgia's off to their best start since 2003. So best start in 21 years for the Dawgs, who are 14-5. They're 4-2 in the SEC. Now that Jim Herrick team lost to Florida in a famous game, the Peep from Deep game, where Anthony Richardson hit a logo three at the buzzer over Jarvis Hayes to beat the Dawgs. I used to have a poster of that. Like, it was a framed photograph, I guess, not a poster. It's a framed photograph. It just said Pete from Deep on it. And it was Richardson, Roberson making that shot. And man, Anthony Roberson was something else as a scorer. That Dawgs team was just lethal. They finished first in the country in offensive efficiency. They had the Hayes brothers, they had Damian Wilkins, who was a microwave off the bench. They had Ezra Williams, who was an all-SEC kind of jack-of-all-trades wing at a time when, like, the wing was an alien and not everybody wanted to just stockpile them. Man, they were good. This Georgia team does not have that talent, but I do think it's probably the best roster that Mike has constructed in a long time in terms of balance, right? It's certainly more balanced than Florida because Georgia has more wings. Now, I'm not saying it's more talented than Florida. That's not the case. Florida has a more talented group, but the Dawgs definitely have better balance than Florida, whether it's, you know, RJ Melendez, Jabri Abdur-Rahim, Jalen Deloach is certainly more of a classic four who they play at the five a lot. But, you know, Silas Damari, Noah Thomason, like they're going to present some issues with Florida from a size standpoint, just because they have more options at the wing. They do have a small point guard in Justin Hill, and Blue Kane, while he's definitely 6'5", is not particularly athletic. Like, I wouldn't call him a wing in any way. He's just a big guard, and a little bit plodding, even though he can shoot. But certainly the point is there's a little more balance here, and a lot of that is because of Melendez than the Gators have. And Melendez, you know, was a B1G starter, Big Ten starter from Illinois. Jalen Deloach, who they play at the five mostly, which kind of surprises me because he was kind of a banger four at VCU. And he's played big games at Virginia Commonwealth, right? NCAA tournament games. So he's a guy that I, you know, isn't going to be afraid. Noah Thomason was a big time scorer at Niagara, and Dawgs assistant Eric Pastrana, who's a friend of the pod, and a friend of ours personally, is very high on Thomason. One of the reasons they liked him so much was because of how he played against Power Six opponents. And that was a key kind of component of how they scouted him. It's always been, you know, important to Mike, I know, from past conversations. Like, when they looked at transfers, they wanted to know how they played against bigger time opponents. And I think that has served them pretty well over the years, you know, as they've had transfers like Kenyon Berry win SEC Sixth Man of the Year. So you know, they do know what they're doing in terms of their portal evaluations. Historically, they've done a good job with transfers, and this year is obviously no different, with Melendez being excellent. And then I think getting pretty good minutes out of Noah Thomason, you know, most often. Now, I will say it's interesting that Justin Hill, their starting point guard, who is another guy who he's a transfer, second year transfer that they got from Longwood. He has kind of not started recently. Silas Damari, the high four-star freshman, who was kind of listed as a combo guard. There were questions as to whether or not he could play point guard at the college level. He's been the starting point guard in most of their lineups over the last few games. So definitely an opportunity for Florida there. I like Silas Damari's game defensively. I think he has quick feet. I think he also makes good decisions, you know, and I would point to some numbers kind of bearing that out. I mean, he's got, you know, a nice little ability to get to the line when he does attack. He draws a lot of fouls, so he can get downhill pretty quick. And then he has that 18.8 assist rate, which is pretty nice considering he's, you know, not turning the ball over a lot for a freshman that's playing point guard, but he's certainly turning the ball over at a rate that would concern you if you were an upperclassman, right? A 19.8 turnover rate for a freshman is objectively not terrible, but it's not great overall. So I think that they've just gone to him, despite the fact that Justin Hill is a little less turnover prone because of what Damari brings the offense. And I think that makes sense. If you look at Georgia's last 10 games, it looks like their offense is kind of maxed out. They're at 93rd in offensive efficiency. They're at 81st in their last 10 games, according to Bart Torvik. So they're not getting a ton better, but where they have hung their hat is on defense. They're 49th in KenPom defense, and that's up markedly from Tom Crean's final year when Georgia finished 318th in defense. So it's just 2 years into the White era. Georgia has really revolutionized their defensive culture, playing top 50 defense for the first time since early in the Mark Fox era. And they are a tough team defensively. They switch everything as you'd expect. They hedge, they are good at it. And then they press. They have that 13 press, and it's an excellent. They play that 13 press on 7% of possessions. I expect that number to be even higher against the Gators, but they only give up 0.63 points per possession out of that press. You know, you think about some of the Florida teams that actually struggled to defend in it a little bit. Georgia is excellent at executing it with this group. So they are smart. They will slow you down with it and use it to dictate tempo a little bit. Although this white team plays, I would say this white team plays pretty fast for a Mike team. They're 87th in tempo, but they will slow things down when they can. Although they got in that 83 possession sprint fest with Kentucky, which I don't know if that was Mike's plan, and then played a 68 possession game and a 67 possession game in wins against South Carolina and LSU. So you wonder what exactly they want to do for sure. You know, their high possession games in SEC play have been Tennessee and Kentucky. They've lost. Now they had a huge lead against Tennessee and blew it. Mike still has that tendency to take the foot off the gas late, slow the game down. And I don't think that is ever going to change. That just seems to be in Mike's DNA, drain the clock. And it does leave them susceptible to the comebacks that drove Florida fans nuts. But they're a good defensive team. And I think given Florida's struggles against Miss State in the press the other night, that is going to be a concern. They don't shoot the three well offensively. I mentioned they've kind of maxed out. They did hit 12 of 28 versus Missouri for a win in their road opener. They made 14 of 33 against Tennessee, which I think was their high water mark. But typically, even though they're at 34% makes, which is decent, they aren't terribly lethal out there. Jabri Abdur-Rahim is sort of the mismatch four that makes the bulk of their three-pointers. He's an excellent three-point shooter, shooting around 40% on pretty good volume. Silas Damari is not going to scare you out there. He doesn't want to take too many. Melendez will shoot him. He won't make them. He's shooting 22%. So if he's open, there's a reason for that. Noah Thomason is shooting just 35%. I think they'd like a little bit more out of him. He's a career guy that shoots about 38% in his career. So he's shooting a little under normal. Thomason is interesting because he's big, old, and physical, sort of like Zion Pullen. And while he wasn't the high-end talent that, say, Silas Damari or Blue Kane were, those are two top 100 players that they landed, I think Thomason is an interesting guy because he's physical. He could challenge Walter Clayton and Pullen from a physicality standpoint, and I expect him to do that. He's had some good games this year. Thomason, he was excellent against Tennessee. He was excellent against Missouri. He was excellent against Arkansas. But he's also had some quieter nights. He also had a monster game against Georgia Tech. So, you know, containing him, he's kind of their X factor. You know, Florida's 9-1 when Will Richards in double figures. Georgia's much more likely to win when Thomason goes off. Damari, you know, I think is a guy who Florida also has to watch because the Gators have struggled some in getting their hips turned against physical guards. We mentioned Thomason. Damari is just big. I don't know how physical he is yet, but he's definitely a guy who can get to the paint. He's has a high free throw rate. So, you know, Florida has to be careful there, but with him playing on the road and a 20% turnover rate, I think that's probably an advantageous matchup for the Gators. Blue Kane is the guy that certainly can make shots. I think it will be fascinating for me to see just how often Blue Kane is, you know, on the floor. If he makes his first couple shots, is Mike handling it like that? We've seen Mike handle talented shooters that way. Kane is certainly not a guy that they get a lot from a defensive standpoint. He's kind of plodding. He's not a high-level athlete. So it will be interesting, I think, to see just where he's at in that standpoint. RJ Sunahara is a guy who missed an early part of the season with an injury. He's been back. He offers about 10 minutes a game. He was the D2 player of the year. One of those interesting takes, I want to say, from White. The one thing I'll say about Sunahara is that he didn't lose a game for a year and a half in D2. So I think they took him like kind of as a winner. He's definitely forward depth on a roster that definitely needed some extra rebounding and just needed somebody to be a glue guy, it made sense that they took him. They probably saw sort of a Justin Leon type. I think you could say the same of Jalen Deloach, who at VCU, of course, they thrive on defense and toughness and intangibles. So he's a Richmond tough kid. Same kind of thing. And they're not going to come into the O'Connell Center and get pushed around. They're going to be physical. They're going to press. They're going to present problems for Florida. And you know they want to win this game. It's quad one opportunity for the Dogs. So certainly an intriguing matchup, I think. One where Florida seems to have the advantage at guard. And then the question becomes, like, do the Gators handle Jabri Abdur-Rahim? And do the Gators not get overwhelmed on the interior with Russell Sheshwa, who's playing good, and with, you know, the fact that Florida has struggled against teams that can wing you at the kind of forward spots? Because RJ Melendez is and Abdur-Rahim will be tough matchups for Florida, no matter what. Even if Florida has advantages at guards, it'll be, you know, put Tyrese Samuel in some tough spots. And, you know, the onus will thus be on Kondo and Micah Hanlockton, who has been playing really well over the last two games, to kind of continue with that trend. Georgia has played quite a few close games, especially in league play, but even before league play. I mean, they haven't been blown out this year. They haven't lost to anyone by more than 11 points. They had a 12-point loss to Miami. That was probably their most lopsided defeat when Miami was healthy. Every team that they've lost to is going to the NCAA tournament. Providence, Miami, Oregon, with the exception of maybe Oregon, like every team that Georgia has lost to is going to the NCAA tournament, with the exception of maybe Oregon. So right now, you know, if you beat Georgia, you're probably an NCAA tournament team. That's the bottom line, whether you do it at home or away. You know, I think the biggest thing we talked about with teams in the portal era is you can build a nice balanced roster like Mike White has done. Do you have a star? And for me, you know, Georgia really needs RJ Melendez to be that guy if they're going to win games like this. Melendez is a good shooter. When he's healthy, he can drive, he can score. He can dish. He also does have games where he kind of checks out mentally. It hasn't happened as much this season, to be fair. They've done a nice job of kind of preventing that. But he does have these games where he's not, you know, superstar RJ, where he can be kind of deferential. And his minutes have decreased as a result of that. Now, Mike's playing 10 dudes, 9 dudes, 10 dudes. But it is interesting to see, like, that they beat South Carolina and RJ Melendez gives him 16 minutes, right? It's interesting that they beat Missouri on the road and Melendez shoots 1 of 8 and plays 14 minutes. So Mike is not afraid to sit RJ when he's not up for the task. It'll be interesting to kind of watch him early in the game. You'll figure out, like, hey, is this going to be good RJ Melendez, or is this going to be, like, bad absentee RJ Melendez? That is sort of the X factor for me. For Georgia, just like Will Richards, scoring is almost always the X factor for the Gators. Ultimately, it's a game Florida should win. They're at home, and they're the better team from a talent standpoint. And obviously, the Gators have been excellent at home this year, just the one home loss. The 2-point loss to Kentucky. Florida has another sellout. I am told that the Auburn game has now also sold out. So shout out to the Gators fans, man, making the O-Dome a top place. Hopefully it's a house of horrors tomorrow. Get early, get there early, get loud, and help the Gators, you know, ward off Blanco and send him back to Athens without a quad one dub. Go Gators, keep attacking closeouts.